What's going on, everybody, and good morning. Today is Thursday, October 24th, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And, well, a pretty regular slash, dare I say, boring day at the NovaCare on Wednesday. Nothing really big happened. No major new injury news. No big, scandal of the week that Nick had to talk about, that all the players had to talk about. It kind of felt like back to normal. And to be honest, for a team that has certainly dealt with a lot of drama over these first 6 weeks or 7 weeks, if you include the bye week, it was refreshing. It wasn't, Nick has to talk about this. Jalen needs to talk about that. Let's see if this player is practicing. Oh my God, AJ and Devontae aren't there. It was a normal day of football. And, it's kind of like what me and James talked about in the latest Go Birds. Make sure you guys check that out. It is in your podcast feed. They're kind of getting back to what they were before all this drama. Obviously, the game on Sunday against Cincinnati is a big one. And just sorry, I had to cough there, much like Nick did, who had a big coughing fit today during his press conference. I felt bad for the guy. I've never seen a coach deal with such a cough during his press conference. I actually had to get up during the press conference, walk out of the room and collect himself. The PR person brought him some milk. He said he hasn't had a glass of milk in 20 years. Agree with him on that. Milk is gross. Shout out oat milk. But yeah, a regular day outside of the Nick Sirianni coughing fit that resulted in a glass of milk being brought to the press conference. That being said, there's always things happening that we have to get into. So excited to share with you what did happen on Wednesday and take a look forward on what you need to know for today, what to keep an eye out for. First, let's start with what is on the schedule. The Eagles back at the NovaCare Complex. They will be practicing today and they will be speaking to the media again. So no press conferences, no Nick, no Jalen, no coordinators, but practice begins at 2:15. So we'll see who is out there, see if, hopefully knock on wood, this isn't the case. But a few times this year, they've practiced on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, players aren't out there. So we'll see who's out there on Thursday for practice. And then at 4:10, the locker room opens. We'll get a chance to talk to the players, see if there is anything interesting that they have to say. And hey, if there is something you guys want me to ask them, I'm happy to do it. Tweet me, email me, and I will see if I can make it happen. Maybe we'll do like a Go Birds daily question of the day or something. I don't know. Whatever I can do to make you guys feel more part of the process. So that's what's on the schedule. 2:15 practice, 4:10, the open locker room. The injury report for Wednesday. So it was a long injury report, but I think that it was still a fairly good injury report for the Eagles, considering all the names that were on it. First, let's start with who was a full participant. Tight end Albert O, full participant. Wide receiver Anaya Smith, full participant. At this point, it's mostly just waiting until their practice window closes and the Eagles have to make a decision what they want to do with them. It's pretty clear at this point, they're good and ready to go. Limited, Saquon Barkley because of rest. Brandon Graham because of rest. Eli Ricks continues to be dealing with a groin injury. Darius Slay, rest. Josh Sweat, rest. So no real concerns there. I would expect all those players, other than Eli Ricks, who doesn't play anyway, to be available on Sunday. The did not practice report. As expected, guard Mekhi Becton did not practice on Wednesday due to a concussion. Tyler Steen was in his place in warmups, which is what you would expect. Tyler Steen, I think, has played well in spot duty this year when he's had to step in there and play. As we've seen with Fred Johnson, though, when you have to play for a full week, things aren't as easy. But at this point, I think it's a pretty good chance you'll see Tyler Steen starting out there against the Bengals, which will mean they'll be without two of their five starting linemen that they began the season with. Just seems unlikely that we haven't seen a player pass within a week, I think, in the NFL all year, but certainly with the Eagles. So I'd expect no Mekhi Becton on Sunday against the Bengals. Tight end Dallas Goedert also didn't practice with that hamstring injury. I don't think he'll play. I don't think you'll see him in Cincinnati. At this point, you have to hope he's back the following week against the Jaguars, but even that, I don't think is any kind of guarantee. Look, obviously missing Goddard's a big deal, but if they can win while he's not there, you do hope he rests up and can be 100%, so that when he comes back, he's not dealing with this week after week. Like AJ. AJ probably took longer than they thought, but AJ has been good since then. So I would think Dallas needs to take his time coming back from it. And then the one question, the one player that I think will be the true question this week is Zach Bond. Zach Bond did not practice because of that shoulder injury. Saw him after practice in the locker room. Didn't have it wrapped. Didn't, you know, no apparent sign of injury. Seemed to be in fine spirits. So that's a good sign. But didn't practice. I think Thursday, if he doesn't practice, he probably won't be playing. He didn't speak, or at least I wasn't around when he spoke today. So no indication on that front. And if he's not there, it's a loss. I would imagine you'll see Jeremiah Trotter Jr. out there a little bit more. You'll see Oren Burks out there a little bit more. And new fullback Ben Van Sumeren. Maybe he'll get some action out there. But Zach Bond's been really good for him. The Bengals do have a good tight end in Mike Gesicki. So not having Zach Bond would certainly be it would be a blow to the defense. That's putting a few good weeks together. They've been relatively healthy, so they've been able to get more and more reps together. Not having Zach Bond out there definitely impacts the game, in my opinion. All right, news of the day: the Eagles did make a roster move, as we discussed on Tuesday. The Eagles released wide receiver Paris Campbell. Well, he's back. He was at practice today. He's signed to the practice squad. Now, an interesting part of him being on the practice squad is he has no more elevations available. So they're not able, I believe, to promote him back to the 53-man roster for a week, right? They've done it three times with him. Then he was on the active roster. So if they want to bring him back, they'll have to release somebody from the active roster to put him up to the active roster. So at this point, Paris Campbell seems to basically just be insurance in case a receiver were to be injured. And then at that point, if that player goes on IR, they have to release somebody else. Paris Campbell can go to the roster and play. So by releasing Paris Campbell earlier in the week, it did open up a roster spot. That roster spot went to Jack Driscoll. He's the backup center now, it seems, so it's not surprising he gets that roster spot. He's been promoted a few times this season. Doesn't seem like Nick Gates has lost his role on the team, but he's still on the 53, which is kind of surprising. So Jack Driscoll on the 53-man roster, Paris Campbell on the practice squad. All right, Nick Sirianni spoke to the media on Wednesday, and he was asked a question, something we've talked about a little bit on here. Just talked about it with James as well. This idea that Vic Fangio is so different than Nick Sirianni personality-wise, right? Nick is very, very talkative, very friendly, very hug him up, you know, family type guy. Vic Fangio, who I'm sure loves his family, but is much more of an old school, you know, quiet, short answers, isn't like Mr. Talkative, isn't, you know, joking around with the players kind of guy. So Sirianni was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
I think every situation calls for something probably a little bit different. I think, you know, like I said, he's about the result of the play and how he gets the guys better and how he puts them in positions to succeed. And I think he's consistent, you know, with everything. I don't think there's a lot of surprise of, you know, you make a mistake. What you got there?
Milk.
I don't need milk. I haven't had a glass of milk in probably 20 years. but I think he's just really consistent. I think guys respect the consistency. Now, you might not always like, and that's what you try to do as a coach. You might not always like, and not everybody might always like what's being said. But I think everyone has to respect the consistency. And I think that's what I admire about Vic.
So I think it's an interesting dynamic because Sirianni is so into the like family culture. Everyone gets along. Everyone talks, like everyone plays for each other. And I think Vic can be about that without acting that way. But I've always found it surprising throughout the year whenever I talk to a player or a player is asked by another reporter a question, it is not a lot of like, here's what Vic told me. It's a lot of like, here's what the position coach told me. It doesn't sound like Vic is having a ton of one-on-one meetings with his players. It sounds like, I mean, he coaches from the booth. So he's not even down there on Sunday on the sidelines at practice. Doesn't seem super talkative. He seems much more of like a overseeing what's going on. Whereas Nick is not like that. It's a little similar to the Nick Jalen dynamic. I think the difference is Jalen, you know, is close with his teammates, you know, mostly. So there's that. But I don't know if it's a bad thing to have a head coach that acts one extreme and a defensive coordinator that acts to the other extreme. I think it's good to have different personalities in a building. I think it's good to have two guys that play off of each other. You know, like Nick said, good cop, bad cop type of thing. I don't know if you'd necessarily need that, but it is an interesting dynamic. And look, I don't think it's any secret that Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie are very involved in who the coordinators are. But you do wonder, like, I don't know, like Nick on one hand, Vic Fangio on one hand seems like a Nick guy because he's done it for a long time. They're definitely at their core football guys. Like, I think Nick definitely respects what Vic Fangio has done in his career. And I think he definitely would just look at the name and say, all right, this is a guy I want to run my defense. But they seem to be very different personalities. So just an interesting dynamic between those two. Right now, Vic's doing an awesome job with what the defense has done these past few weeks. Obviously, Sirianni, we are constantly talking about the job he did. But when you've won two games in a row, you know, differing personalities is a good thing that helps a team. When you lose two games in a row, then it's, can these guys coexist? So a lot of this is really just tied to the scoreboard. The other thing Nick Sirianni talked about was in the post-game victory video that the team put out after their win over the Giants, Nick is heard saying, you know, they got their mojo back. He was asked about that, and here's what he had to say.
I think I said about the pass rush, you know, okay. And so it was just, you know, when you have two games in a row where the pass rush has been what it's been, you know, I just felt that. I kind of wrote that, like, I write notes on my call sheet as we go through the game, you know, things that need to be corrected, this and that you see live. And I just wrote that in the middle of the game after maybe the fifth sack, like, it just felt like that, right? Where it's, you know, at any point with the guys that were going up front, that at any point they could get a sack because of the way they were rushing. And so that's how I felt about it. And it was, you know, I know the defensive line felt that way too. The defense felt that way. I think the offense felt that way. I think the entire team felt that way of, like, you know, because we've had a lot of sacks here in my 4 years. It's a great feeling, you know, because that's a stat we pay a lot of attention to, because it's kind of in that double positive, the explosive play battle and the turnover battle. It kind of goes, it's you know, the next one that we look at there. And so we know how important that is.
So I think it's interesting that Nick puts down little notes on his call card during the game, like things he wants to say, things he notices. I respect it. Like, I think it's, you know, someone that certainly doesn't have the best memory. It's funny to think that he does that. And I would agree with him. You know, obviously we've talked about the defensive line's play at length, how on one hand, you know, it's a bad offensive line they've gone against. It's a bad offense. But I think too, like, in a lot of ways, we talk about how the team as a whole, when they can get some good reps week after week, when they can beat up on bad teams, that's just a sign of a well-operating unit. I think the fact that defensive line had so much success these last 2 weeks will help them and propel them to play better against better offensive lines. And the second half of this pod, we're going to talk about the Bengals offensive line, who's good, who's not, what positions can be attacked. But I think they enter this game with more swagger for sure because of the last two games they've played. So I think Nick nailed it. Like, when you watch the game and you watch how they're all reacting to each other, Nolan Smith is going crazy. Like, you know, Jalen Carter is hugging people. Josh Sweat's doing a celebration. Like, I do think they are getting their confidence back. Or to how Nick said it, I think that they are getting their mojo back in some ways. So that's what these last 2 weeks have really done too. And that's, you know, what me and James talked about. Like, I think they've started to turn the corner and they've started to resemble something that could become a special team. And it has been a long time since they've looked that way, for sure. All right, final thing I wanted to get into. So Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, obviously longtime great NFL reporter, was talking about what he's hearing around the league with the trade deadline, less than 2 weeks away now, which is crazy. And look, this is kind of a vague report, let's be honest. Like, I could have probably told you this, but it is, you know, trade deadline season, and it's interesting to hear what he is hearing. So he heard that the Eagles are, quote, checking in, end quote, on pass rushers, and that, quote, Howie Roseman calls on everyone, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is to be expected. Edge rusher is obviously the biggest need on this roster, both this year and moving forward. As we just talked about, the edge rushers have started to play better, but they are still a unit that is missing an elite number one edge rusher. And for a team that believes so strongly in the defensive line, it's not surprising they will call around. Now, the question is, how much is Howie going to be willing to give up? Like, is Myles Garrett going to be 3 first-round picks? Is Max Crosby going to be 2 first-round picks? Is he able to find somebody that's not like a Robert Quinn or a Jannard Avery? Or is he going to be able to find like a difference-making guy that comes in here and is instantly the number one option? That'll be hard to do. Finding good edge rushers is hard. Finding teams willing to trade good edge rushers is hard. And teams that are bad generally don't have good edge rushers. I know the two we talked about are, but they're going to be premium prices to pay for those players. And rightfully so, they're great players. So it'll be interesting to see what Howie does over these next 2 weeks. I would be surprised if he did anything before Sunday. They've now filled the roster spot, so they're at 53 players on the roster. So if they make a trade for a draft pick, they will have to go out and release somebody. But yeah, I would back up what Albert Breer says. Howie Roseman's greatest strength as a GM in a lot of ways is his ability to collect information, his relationship he has around the leagues from being in the job for so long, and feeling like he always needs to know what guys are being traded for. And I expect his phone to be very, very busy over these next few weeks. All right, on the other side, let's start to preview the Eagles game versus the Bengals. And let's take a look at what is really the most important matchup of the week every week, the offensive line for both teams. Let's start with the Bengals offensive line and how much of a test this could be for the Eagles defensive line. So on the other side, we will get into that. But first, a word from our sponsors. Okay, so like we were talking about on the pod, this Eagles defensive line is getting their mojo back. They're playing with confidence. They're getting the quarterback. They're getting them down. They're celebrating. As Nick said, the mojo is back. So can they keep it going this week against the Bengals offensive line? The Bengals offensive line, you know, we all think back to the Super Bowl a few years ago that they were in. They have not been a good unit for a lot of years, but the Bengals have gone out and tried to improve the unit, and they have put together a team from an offensive line perspective that is not great, but it is serviceable. And what you're seeing is because they have a serviceable offensive line, for a couple reasons, which we'll get into, like they're able to put up points. The Bengals offense is really, really good. The Bengals, I think, are 4th in points per drive. They're one of the top 10 passing offenses in the league for obvious reasons. They have Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Mike Gesicki. Like, they have really good players, but you can't be a great passing team without a great pass blocking offensive line. And while the pass blocking line is not great, they are good enough. So let's take a deep dive into this offensive line, look at some of the matchups and see where the Eagles can take advantage. So a first quick overlook at the Bengals offensive line. According to Pro Football Focus, they're 21st in the league in pass blocking. I think they're probably a little bit better than that, but they're not like a top 10 type unit, grade-wise at least. This year, they're 14th in pressures allowed, so right around middle of the pack there. They're 8th in sacks allowed. Now, part of that is Joe Burrow gets rid of the ball really, really quickly. I think he's 4th in the league in getting rid of, or no, I think he's 9th in the league in getting rid of the ball. But regardless, he's top 10 in the league in getting rid of the football. They will play the quick game against the Eagles, I would guess. Now, they still do manage to get big plays. Jamar Chase has made a lot of big plays down the field this season. But like that Tampa Bay game, it would not surprise me if they came out and quick played the Eagles. So we'll see what the Eagles plan is for that. And later in the week, we'll talk about the Bengals receivers versus Eagles secondary. But part of the reason they have to get rid of it quickly is because their line is not a great line. They're a good line, not a great line. And they're able to do it. Joe Burrow is able to diagnose the defense. He's able to get rid of the ball quickly. They're able to scheme it up. So I do think you'll see some quick play from the Bengals offense. But now let's look at their starting five. So left tackle Orlando Brown Jr. He's awesome. One of the best tackles in the league. He's 9th in pass protection this year. 5 hurries in 7 games now. Very impressive. 2 sacks allowed. Now I will say he left the game against Cleveland with an injury. He said he's okay. It seems like they think he's okay, but we'll see if he plays. And if he doesn't play, they're in some trouble because the backup is not good whatsoever. But if he plays, it'll be a really tough matchup for either Josh Sweat or Bryce Huff. I'm sure the Eagles will move them around. But yeah, Orlando Brown Jr., really, really good. Left guard Cordell Volson. Now, the interior is kind of like where they take a little bit of a step down. They don't have great guards. They have a really good left tackle in Orlando Brown. They have a great center that we'll talk about in a second. but the guards and right tackle spot are not really outstanding. Cordell Volson, 46, according to Pro Football Focus, in pass blocking, so not great. Eight hurries, two sacks. I think this is a matchup the Eagles should be able to take advantage of. And again, like, we will see if Jalen Carter is able to demand a double team, and if he is, are they putting Jordan Davis out there on passing downs? Are they putting Moro Ojomo and Milton Williams, who've been better pass rushers this year? I think we know what they're going to do. So if Cordell Volson, let's just say, for example, and Ted Karras, who's their center, Ted Karras is awesome. One of the best centers in the league, fourth in pass blocking, three hurries, one sack, really, really good player. If they decide to double with Ted Karras, and then whether it's on the left or right side, so right guard, Alex Kappa, just a fine player, nothing super special, 34th in Pro Football Focus, eight hurries, four sacks. If they decide to take the, you know, Ted Karras and put him either with the left guard or the right guard, however they want to double up Jalen, it'll then be on Milton Williams. I'll include Jordan Davis, although they're not going to put him out there on passing downs, and Moro Ojomo to make sure that they take advantage of what are average type guards outside of the center. And then right tackle, Amarius Mims, a rookie. We talked about him leading up to the draft. He's struggled so far as a rookie. Out of the 60 offensive tackles that have played enough snaps, he's ranked 50th, eight hurries, one sack. This is a matchup the Eagles should win. Like, Nick Sirianni says they're getting their mojo back, they're playing better. Let's see him ride that momentum into this game and take advantage of a rookie that has only played five games this year. He missed two games, so doesn't have a ton of experience. The Eagles pass rushers, while maybe not great, they are experienced. Josh Sweat's been a Pro Bowl player. Bryce Huff has had 10 and a half sacks. Like, again, I know they are not those players now, but Amarius Mims is a player they should be able to beat, a player that they should be able to get pressure on. And Joe Burrow, decent in the pocket moving. I know he had like that 40-yard touchdown run a few weeks ago, but he is someone you can get to for sure. The quick passing game, again, will be part of it, which should negate, obviously, the pass rush to an extent. But the matchups on this game are not crazy hard. Like, if Orlando Brown plays, that's a tough one. But if he doesn't, they're going to have two tackles that aren't great. They're going to have two guards that are only okay. They're going to have a really good center, but, you know, with Jalen Carter, and I still think they could get pressure. So I look at this matchup as one that is winnable for the Eagles because of the quick passing game. I would be surprised if they got like three or four sacks, but to Nick Sirianni's point, they got their mojo back. So let's see what they can do this weekend against Cincinnati. So that will do it for today's Daily Go Birds pod. Thank you guys so much for listening. Super, super appreciate it. Means the world to me. And we will talk later in the week, with James, with all of our Parks Picks pods. We'll have Go Birds on Sunday or on Saturday. So a lot to get into before this game on Sunday against the Bengals. So as we say to end every pod, he's Elliot, I'm James. I'll talk to you guys later.